Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Alongside Clint Sterner and Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Branham. Let's meet some of this Colts arsenal that Jacoby Brissett's going to have either to throw the football to or hand the football off to. John Harris mentioned a little bit, T.Y. Hilton is listed as questionable on the Colts injury report today. Will he play? Will he not play? Well, Romeo Crennel thinks to know.
Yes, I mean, he's going to play. He's probably counting on it, and I'm not necessarily counting on it or looking forward to it, but you got to prepare for him to play because he'll show up.
And whenever he shows up, I don't think that's the noise he was making after he thinks T.Y. Hilton is going to play. T.Y. Hilton in 16 games against the Houston Texans over the course of his career, 87 catches, 1,604 yards, also has 10 touchdowns. We know that when he plays the Texans, he has great games. He also calls NRG Stadium his second home, something that last year Jonathan Joseph was not a big fan of.
Sounds good. You know, it's easy to say it. You know, I can easily say that too. Or we can call this division our division since I've been here last 5 out of 8 years, however y'all want to draw it up.
JJ was asked if that was going to add any fire to T.Y. Hilton calling NRG Stadium his second home. And JJ said, nah, it's not going to add anything to the fire.
Nah, that's for clowns, man. That's for TV. That's what they do. You put something in their face, anybody can sit.
So there's a little bit of beef here between the Colts and the Texans. Obviously, division rivals. They've been the top of the division for it seems like a while now. And T.Y. Hilton does have success against the Houston Texans, has success against Jonathan Joseph. So how can the Texans slow him down, if at all, on Thursday? Hope his injury is a little bit more severe than what he's letting on?
Yeah, first and foremost, get physical with him at the line of scrimmage and see what that calf is all about. See if you can put him in a funky position to where he's got to stretch that thing out a little bit and tweaks it, and then he watches from the sideline. That's got to be the game plan initially is coming out is don't allow him a free release off the ball. I don't know if that's not a great game plan any way you look at it. Disrupt him as much as you possibly can. Be physical as much as you possibly can. Here's the problem is that's more than likely a game plan that he's seen multiple times throughout his career. He's found a way to beat it, and they're going to have more than just disruptive man-to-man defense at the line of scrimmage to stop T.Y. Hilton. I mean, you know, and T.Y.'s great. There's no doubt about it. And this next point I'm going to make is not taking anything away from T.Y. Hilton, but a lot of T.Y. Hilton's success over the years has stemmed from Andrew Luck, right? I mean, it wasn't just T.Y. Hilton being a great player, which he is, but Andrew Luck's ability to extend plays and then to accurately throw the football on the move outside the pocket, the ability to keep his eyes down the field and accurately deliver a football to T.Y. Hilton is a big part of the chunk plays. It's a big part of the 100-plus yards per game. He's going to get his, but you've got to limit the chunk plays. And I think Andrew Luck was very, very good at extending plays and keeping his eyes downfield and finding T.Y. Hilton. So the simple fact that Andrew Luck is not there will help the Texans have an opportunity to slow him down. And so it's been a group effort that's compiled all those stats that you just threw out there. But there's ways to slow him down.
Well, I think it's about time that the Texans approach T.Y. Hilton when he comes here in Houston the same way that every team that approaches DeAndre Hopkins when they play against him. And that's they have to put two guys toward him every single play. They got to have two sets of eyes on T.Y. Hilton every single play and then let everybody else beat you, because T.Y. has shown that he will beat you. And if it's single coverage, I don't care who you put on him, he's going to have success. I think when you couple the fact that they have an offensive line that can protect for extended period of times, a lot of times they like to protect with 6 and 7 guys so that if you're rushing for in that play, you might have two guys on him, but he's still going to find a way to get open. Every single play you go out there, I think that you have to look at it and say, you know what, we're going to double T.Y. and we're going to make somebody else beat us. Ebron's going to have to beat us. Pascal's going to have to beat us. Rodgers, somebody else is going to have to beat us this game, but it's not going to be T.Y. And if you take that approach, now you have a much better chance of winning a ball game, because you've seen over the years that he's going to get his if you just play him straight up. And I don't think the Texans do a lot of doubling of him. When I see him get off, it's because he's beating single coverage. He's beating off coverage. He's having opportunity to work one-on-one. And so I think it's time now, man, you got to double him. Because if you don't and he's healthy, he's going to have a hell of a ball game.
Wait, I would expect them to, in key situations, like you said, you can't just double the guy all the time. But we watch the Texans film every week multiple times, and you see safeties – tilted over towards DeAndre Hopkins, whether it's man or zone. So they're going to favor the free guy in that man or zone is going to favor DeAndre Hopkins. I would fully expect the Texans to do that. And that leads us to T.Y. Hilton's going to get his. And you watch the last few games with the Texans, it's not been about T.Y. Hilton getting his. It's not been about him getting 100 yards. It's been about what they were able to do in certain situations on the backside away from T.Y. Hilton. What's the number two receiver or the opposite receiver been able to do? I can vividly remember the Sluggo route backside last year in 2018, winning for a touchdown, a critical touchdown, when the corner was 12 yards off and pedaling at the snap. He somehow bit Sharice Wright, on an in-cutting route, and they went to the corner. And so those are the kind of things that you cannot afford to happen. If T.Y. gets his, let him go on get his. But you can't let him convert three or four third downs and possibly get points on the board because the backside corner gets beat by their number two receiver. That's the part of this thing that if T.Y. is getting his and their number two is converting in critical situations, it's tough to stop it. And they're able to run the football with the offensive line you mentioned. It's going to be tougher than hell to stop the Texans. The Colts. You got to shut that backside guy down.
How much better are the Texans equipped to stop whether it's T.Y. Hilton, their number one receiver, or the backside of what the Colts can gain advantageously because so much focus is on T.Y. Hilton? Roby questionable with a hamstring injury, but you've added speed guys like Conley, Vernon Hargraves. We haven't seen him yet in a Texans uniform, and he's supposed to play inside corner. But are they better equipped now as opposed to Jonathan Joseph, an aging corner?
Only if Bradley Roby is healthy are they better equipped. Yep. He is the key to answer your question. If Bradley Roby is healthy, now you can put Roby on that second guy and just shut him down. And now you can use your other guys to double T.Y. Hilton, and then you're good to go. Now that you're forcing them to throw the ball to Eric Ebron or run the ball. And running the ball plays right into the Texans' hands. And even though they had a bad outing against the Baltimore Ravens, the Texans, for the most part, stop the run better than anybody in the league. And so you have to keep in mind that the last time that they played the Colts, they stopped the run very well. They got beat because of penalties, because they were forcing the Colts to punt, but then they were giving them extra sets of down because they were illegal hands to the face or defensive holding, different penalties like that that allow drives to keep going. And you keep giving people opportunities, they're going to beat you. But Jacoby Brissett beat him with his arm. He didn't beat him with his legs, or they didn't beat him with the run game. And so you got to force them. You got to take away those outside targets. Do that. If you have Bradley Roby, you're definitely much more equipped in order to do that.
Clinch Turner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham on Sports Radio 610. Their running game is really good, too. Marlon Mack fractured his hand. He will be out for this game. Jonathan Williams had a really good game against Jacksonville coming on for Marlon Mack. He had 116 yards on 13 carries. He also caught a pass for 31 yards, too, so helped out a little bit in the passing game. It's a downgrade a bit for Marlon Mack, and Romeo Crennel thinks that way as well.
I would say so overall. I mean, because if he were not a different runner, or let's say a better runner, he would have been in the game as the starter over Mack. But Mack, you know, is a pretty good runner and has good numbers. And so now he's banged up, so the next man up. And Williams is the next man up.
He's the next man up, and he ran for over 100 yards against Jacksonville. And I don't want to call Marlon Mack a product of the system, but that's such a good offensive line that you put a good, decent running back behind them, they're going to have a productive game, productive season, if that's what's needed if Marlon Mack's out for a while.
I think it's fair to say that whatever running back is behind the Indianapolis Colts offensive line for an extended period of time is going to have success. But there's no bones about it that Jonathan Williams, I know him, he's an Arkansas guy. He's not Marlon Mack. You watch Marlon Mack play, Marlon Mack is a quality back. He's between the tackles. He's got twitch. He's got power. He's got a burst. He's got all the answers that you want in a running back. He can do things across the board at an above average level. Is he the greatest running back? No. Is he the biggest running back? No. Is he the fastest? No. Is he the shiftiest? No. But he does all of those things at an above average level. And so when you lose a guy like that, I would rather have a guy that does all of those things slightly above average than a guy that does one of those things at an elite level, right? I want a solid guy across the board that can help me on every down. He can catch the football out of the backfield. He stays healthy for the most part. It's hard to say that when he's missing a game because he's injured. But for the most part, he stayed healthy. Jonathan Williams is a downhill one-track back. He's not a guy that's going to bounce. He may bounce one or two here or there, but he's not. You don't have to worry about losing contain to Jonathan Williams. You don't have to worry about Jonathan Williams hitting a crease quicker than anybody in the league and taking it the distance. He's a guy that if he gets 100, it's going to be 20, 25 carries, and it's going to be a constant battering ram versus a good defense. That's the only way Jonathan Williams gets 100 yards this week versus the Texans. I don't see, even when there are creases and when there's opportunities and voids across the front, which we know Indy's offensive line is plenty capable of creating versus anybody, not just the Texans, but anybody, that there's going to be those. It's going to be a 10 or 12-yard game versus the 30 or 40, and you're chasing speed. He's just not that guy. Good back, good solid depth at the running back position, but he's not a guy that strikes fear in a defensive coordinator for sure.
Yeah, when I look at the Indianapolis Colts offensive line, they're solid up front. They have a damn good offensive line, and they can run block very well. But I saw them play against the Texans, and all that went out the window. The Texans did a really good job of shutting down that run game the first time they played them. I watched Zach Cunningham stand Quentin Nelson up in the hole, get rid of him, and make the tackle. Those are things that when you think of a matchup and you say, all right, Quentin Nelson going against Zach Cunningham, Quentin Nelson's going to win that because his name is Quentin Nelson. Now, Zach Cunningham had great technique. He's a downhill, aggressive guy. He used his hands, got rid of him, and made the play. I see DJ Reader holding his own, and not even holding his own, dominating at the point of attack in the run game. So I don't care what running back you put out there. There's one thing that I can bank on when it comes to the Texans playing against a conventional offense, and the Colts are a conventional offense. You throw it out the window because they played against the Ravens. And you say, oh, they gave up 260 whatever yards they gave up against the Ravens. That was the Ravens. That is a special circumstance. At the end of the day, when they play against a normal team, they shut them down. And so I expect them to shut them down. I think this game does not come down to who the running back is. If Marlon Mack is there, if he's not there, it doesn't come down to the run game because I expect the Texans to stop the run. The issue is, how are they going to handle T.Y. Hilton and the receivers of the Colts? And how is the Texans going to play offensively? That's what the keys of the game is going to be. And we only got one more day to get there. The game is tomorrow, and this is the biggest game of the year. And so, you know, Marlon Mack, you know, he's a good player, but I don't think he's anything to write home about that would make a difference in this particular game. Maybe if it was a different opponent, but against the Texans, I don't think whoever running back you put out there is not going
to
matter.
Yeah, Mack out, Jonathan Williams will be filling in for him, and they also have the third down backs that they go to quite often as well, Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins. I'll be curious to see the snap share with their running backs, because when Williams came into the game, he came into the game well ahead of Jacksonville and then ran for 100 yards once the game was in hand. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham. Coming up next, Carmelo Anthony made his 2019 debut last night. I think he threw some shade at the Rockets. I want to pick your brains on it. That's next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham with you on a Wednesday afternoon edition of the show. Carmelo Anthony made his debut last night, 2019 debut, and it didn't play all that well. They lost to the Pelicans 115-104. He played 24 minutes. He started, by the way. He started the first game he's played since the Rockets cut him last year. Scored 10 points, 4 of 14 from the floor. His plus-minus was minus 20. In a game that they lost by 11, his plus-minus was minus 20. Anyways, after the game, he talked about his role with the Blazers, and this is where I think he throws some shade at the Rockets.
Did you know from the start that you were going to start today, or was that kind of a late decision?
Nah, that was something that was established, you know, from the gate. We had that phone call. It was, let's be transparent. I think, you know, that was the miscommunication over the past couple seasons about, you know, what my role would be and things that was expected from me. And that was a big point in talking to those guys. Let's be transparent. You know, it's not nothing that I won't be willing to do, but just let me know up front. And if it's whatever it is, just let me know. Just put it all on the table and we go from there. But nothing was ever questioned. It was, okay, we want you to come in. We want you to play. We want you to start. We want you to get going. And that was a big reason why I made that decision.
First of all, I hope he wasn't telling NBA teams that he needed to start for him to sign with that team, because he's been out of the league for nearly a year. Two, he said that he, for the last two seasons at his previous stop, he was only at one stop the last two seasons, that there wasn't transparency like there's been with the Portland Trailblazers. Is Carmelo Anthony taking a shot at the Rockets here?
I mean, he's always up to no good, man. It's just one of them deals like, man, just play ball. Just play ball. I mean, I remember the I watched a one-on-one. I believe it was him and Stephen A. Smith, and I thought I thought it was awesome to see Carmelo Anthony literally just say, "I just want to play ball. I'm a changed man. I'm up in age. I've been at this thing for a while. It's not about starting. It's about continuing to play the game that I love." And so when I saw that Carmelo, I'm like, I can get down with this, right? But the whole on the outside looking in and then like demanding just put things on the table. It's like, no, man, just come play ball. If we start you, we start you. If you come off the bench, you come off the bench. If you can help us, you can help us. Let's just go win. It just always seems like it's extra with Melo for some reason. I don't know why, but it just seems like there's always some extra there.
Well, I think Melo considers himself to be in the same category of a LeBron James. They came in the league at the same time. I think he considers himself to be that caliber of player. And so with that being said, he expects to have certain things explained to him and communicated to him because I'm Melo. You know what I mean?
Right,
but
yeah.
What he has to realize is, although he has a lot of cachet with what he's done in the league, he's not that same guy, and he's not going to get the same opportunities that he might feel like he should get. When you look at his first performance out there, he scores 10 points, and his plus-minus is minus 20. Like, you really don't have an opportunity to be demanding and requesting anything if you have a plus-minus like that. And so – hopefully it's just a first game thing for him and he can get back on track.
Well, because I'm not hoping for that.
Why not? I mean, what did Melo do to you?
Not so much Melo. It's more the Blazers. I want the Blazers to miss the playoffs. Yeah, I think they can be a threat.
The Blazers are like, I don't know, like 4-7 right
they're
now.
A mess.
They're a mess right now.
I don't know
right
how
now.
This helps either.
I'm not even thinking about the Blazers right now. Yeah, I would like to see Carmelo play good just because he's been a consistent player in the league for a long time. It's nothing like watching Hoodie Melo go out there and ball. And so I want to see him be successful. That's just me. I like to see guys be successful, especially when it doesn't hurt what's going on the team that I follow or the team that I support. And I don't think that the Blazers are going to be in the thick of things as we thought they might have going into the season. They don't look like the same ball club out there.
It'll be fun to watch them from afar because I'm really interested how this plays out if it lasts the rest of the season with Carmelo Anthony in Portland, the terrible start that they've already had after going to the Western Conference Finals last year and losing to Golden State.
I'm interested in taking a peek at it.
Oh, for sure.
I'm interested in seeing what Melo's made of late in his career when he gets long in the tooth. Can he still go get it? Or is it just give me the ball and get the hell out of the way and see if I can score? I'm interested. I was not interested in watching the Blazers before, and now I will sit down and at least give him a chance.
He looks weird with the double zero.
He looks really, really
That's
weird.
Always been an odd choice for me. Why in the hell would somebody wear double zero?
You know who I think about whenever I hear double zero or see double zero? Robert Parrish. That's the only one I think about. I don't think about anybody else.
Wasn't that Duckworth's number in with the Blazers too? So that's what I first thought. I saw double zero Blazers. That's Duckworth. Duckworth wasn't good. Why would you want that number, Melo? But yeah, man, that double zero, it looks definitely weird on him.
Yeah, it does look weird. Rockets are in Denver tonight, by the way. Rockets looking for their 9th win in a row. You know, everybody, once James Harden starts to heat up is whenever everybody starts to chime in about how they despise the way that James Harden plays. Like when he was shooting poorly to start the season, not many people were talking about him. All of a sudden, he wins Western Conference Player of the Week. His team's rolling. They've won 8 games in a row. They're second in the Western Conference, a game behind the LA Lakers. And now everybody starts to have an opinion again on James Harden. And they're saying that they don't like the way he plays.
That's when I would prefer somebody to have an opinion when he's doing well versus piling on when he's doing bad. There's nothing worse than the critic that's convenient. You know what I mean? Like, it's convenient to jump on James Harden right now because he struggled and he made he was 1 of 14 from the 3-point line on opening night, and that's not an accurate shot. I don't know what it was. I just know he was struggling. It's convenient at that point to bang on him. It's convenient right now to bang on Deshaun Watson's development, right? Next week, if he plays big and he's back on the MVP race, everybody be talking how great he is. Instead of just critiquing and evaluating throughout accurately, it's people's opinions. They ebb and flow with the play. That's the lazy approach. It's it's convenient, you know, to pick on a guy when he's down. I greatly appreciate the questioning of James Harden when he's at his best. Don't question him when he's struggling. Talk about it when he's at his best if you think it's a problem.
The criticism, go ahead. The criticism is that he's like the James Harden tries to draw fouls. And look, he does lead the league by a mile in free throw attempted, but that's, you're trying to score points. You're trying to figure out a way to exploit the defense to take advantage of it offensively. Like, he's not out there flopping. He's not out there charging. The fouls that he's able to draw, those are real fouls. He's doing his best to, you know, to beat the defender to the spot, to get to the basket and draw contact. He's not sitting there taking flops left and right.
Listen, James Harden, if he wasn't as powerful as he is as a player, he plays the game very strong. If he wasn't that type of player, he wouldn't be able to finish on half the times that he goes up and he draws these fouls. He's a big time and one type of guy. You have to give him credit for the fact that the matter is that he has the ability to cross you over. His handles are very, very nice. He is a talented offensive player. He can pop a, he can just pull up and hit a jumper in your eye. He can go right past you because that's a quick first step. He cross you over and step back. And then when you do foul him, he's strong enough and powerful enough to finish and put the ball in the basket. And so that is, you have to give someone credit for having the ability to do that. And it might be ugly. It might not look the way you want it to look, but it's effective. And at the end of the day, we're about results. We're about producing, and that's what James Harden does. He produces. Now, can we get James Harden to produce in a game 6 or a game 7?
We're not having that conversation until game 6 or game 7. We're going to appreciate the regular season.
Until he does it, that's always going to be something in the back of my head and everybody else's head that, damn, can we get him to do that in a game 6 or game 7 and get the Rockets over the hump? But right now, yeah, we're going to enjoy it. We're going to enjoy the fact that he's averaging damn near 40 points a game, which is ridiculous numbers. But at the end of the day, we got to get him to do it when it matters most.
To me, Wade, if somebody's attacking, like, or complaining about his style of play, like he tries to draw, like, that's personal. Like, you personally don't, for whatever reason, and you may not personally like his game. I don't necessarily like the hold the ball, milk the clock, and the ISO ball. I'm not a huge fan of that style of ball. I like to share the rock. I like movement. I like open high percentage shots. But when I watch him play and he ends up with 39 points and double-digit assists, it's like there's no arguing whether it's effective or not. He's leading the league in scoring, right? He's leading the league in three-pointers made. There's no doubt about it that he's filling up the hoop. I mean, if you complain about the way that he plays the game, it's personal because you don't like it. Because it's effective. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it.
Rockets are underdogs tonight, too, by the way. In Denver, tough place to play, 1.5-point dogs. You have Jamal Murray, who I consider one of the more underrated players in the NBA. So, good test. You know, we talked about the Clippers coming into the Toyota Center a week or so ago. This will be a good test again tonight for the Rockets to see where they are amongst the who's who of the Western Conference.
You got
to
hope those boys are in shape. You know, they talked about earlier in the year about Capella and those guys getting them in shape. By now, they should be in shape. But when you go to Mile High, that's a different environment. And so, they can run you up and down the court and get you tired and run you off of the court if you let them. So it's going to be a big game tonight against the Nuggets.
Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham. Coming up next, Deshaun Watson struggled mightily against Baltimore. How has Deshaun Watson been in bounce-back games so far 3 years into his NFL career? We take a look at that next on Sports Radio 610. Hanging out with Clint Sterner and Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Branham. Deshaun Watson did not play well against Baltimore. I'm a stat guy. Stats shows me that he didn't play very well. You're a video guy. You like to watch the tapes, Clint. And you saw the tape. Deshaun Watson didn't play all that well. Deshaun Watson, over the course of his career, has shown that he can bounce back pretty good. First ever start against Cincinnati, didn't play well, 125 yards, 3 sacks, bounced back with what should have been a win against New England, threw for over 300 yards, had 2 touchdowns in that game. Week 6 and 7 last year, he beat Buffalo and Jacksonville, but it was in spite of Watson, because he was 15-25 against the Bills, 177 yards, 2 picks, 7 sacks, and then the next week against Jacksonville, 15-24, 139 yards. What did he do? He bounced back with a 5-touchdown game against Miami the very next week. Rough game in Washington, week 11, threw 2 picks, bounced back with 3 touchdowns against Tennessee the very next week. This year, you can go back to the win against Jacksonville. he won the game 13-12, did not play well, only had 159 yards. What did he do against the Chargers the very next week? 350 yards, 3 touchdowns. Carolina game, sacked 6 times, 160 yards. They lost 16-10 against Atlanta, 426 yards and 5 touchdowns. This year, the Indy game, about to get the rematch. But against Indy, he threw 2 picks in a 30-23 loss. He bounced back with 3 touchdowns against the Oakland Raiders. So what that tells me is that Deshaun Watson, over the course of his 3-year career in the NFL, yes, he's had some bad starts. He's had some really bad starts. But more times than not, he's bounced back with a really good game. What does that tell you as a former quarterback about the Texans quarterback?
It tells me he's caught some pretty bad opponents after he's had some rough games. You look at that Miami, Tennessee, Chargers, Atlanta, Oakland. Those are good opponents after you struggle to come back and have a good game against. No, look, I mean, it's Deshaun Watson. Dude's ridiculously talented, obviously. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason why he has a good game following a bad game or a bad game following a great game. You know, I just don't think there's any rhyme or reason to it. I do believe that he's a student of the game. I do believe that after tough outings that last for 4 quarters where adjustments aren't made to win the game in the end, I think Deshaun Watson is a quarterback that, and not just in those situations, I think he's a quarterback that is very, very critical of himself. And self-evaluates constantly. And so I do think there's something to be said about a guy of Deshaun Watson's caliber and him gathering his thoughts and him self-evaluating and really refocusing on the little things, refocusing on maybe getting DeAndre Hopkins a football, maybe getting through his progressions quicker, maybe understanding the moment. I think the fact that he is a student of the game allows for those types of improvements. I don't think it's something that he's just adjusting. I think he's learning. I think he's developing. I think he's learning from his mistakes as we watch him grow every season. And so not surprised at all that he bounces back from tough games with better performances. I think it's actually him developing, not just bouncing back.
Yeah, man. When you look at it, Deshaun Watson, he's gonna be that type of guy that more times than not, he's going to have a hell of a ball game. You got to take the good with the bad. You look at sometimes he's going to have an off day. Every quarterback has an off day. There's no such thing as a quarterback that goes through 16 games of a season and they dominate every single ball game. It just doesn't happen that way. But the thing that you have to be encouraged by is when he does struggle, when he does have an off game, he does come back with a vengeance, and you see it in his performance. And people can talk about, well, look who he played. You can play against somebody that's not that good and not dominate them. You know what I mean? You could have just had, he could have had average ball games against him. He could have had, you know, 220 yards and a touchdown and no interceptions. But he didn't. He destroyed those teams. And so that's why he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league, because he has the ability to do that. He's going to take advantage of an opportunity to improve on a bad performance that he had the week before. His talent level has not diminished from one week to the next. He's still Deshaun Watson. He's still the guy that people were talking about as Michael Jordan. He's still that guy that made those plays against the Raiders and those plays against the Colts when they took a touchdown away from him the first game. He's still that guy. And so I fully expect him to come out here and ball tomorrow night. That's just what I've seen out of him. He is that caliber of quarterback. And if you disagree, that's why they get to put the ball down and play it, baby. That's why you get to tune in and watch and see what he can do.
We got some textures, 713-572-4610, that bring up a good point, and it really counters what I'm saying about that Deshaun Watson's really good at bouncing back. What if it's just that he's inconsistent? He's a young quarterback in his third season. Yes, the peaks are really high, but he's also shown that he's prone to some duds over the course of his NFL career. So could it be the consistency factor of a young quarterback? And if it is the inconsistency of a young quarterback, how fearful of that should you be?
Yeah, look, I think it's 6 one way, half a dozen another. I mean, when you talk about, yeah, it's young quarterbacks are inconsistent. That's why they're young quarterbacks. That's why older guys that are longer in the tooth, that have seen every blitz, are more consistent. They're more accurate. They're more calm. They're more efficient. It's because they've seen it before. And so, yeah, there's an inconsistent factor there with all young quarterbacks. And there's definitely one there with Deshaun Watson. I'll say that Deshaun Watson is well ahead of the curve, relatively speaking, to how many starts he has in the league. And I think when I looked at, and not the list that you read off, Jeremy, but when I look at Deshaun Watson and his development, I think Deshaun Watson is a guy that needs more command of what's going on, right? And he will get that as he moves forward. You hope. I don't know what Bill O'Brien allows him to do and not do, but there's situations that have come up, as we mentioned earlier. We've talked about them all week long. Jacksonville at the beginning of the season, and then last week versus Baltimore. There is no doubt about it that what Baltimore wanted to do. There's no doubt about it. Back in that, for that first time that we played, the Texans played Jacksonville with Jalen Ramsey. There is no doubt what they were going to do. You were going to get a heavy dose of man, aggressive man, and they were going to force you to execute accordingly. And so I think as you move along here, you're going to see Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien, but you're going to see Deshaun Watson figure out what he wants to do in those man-to-man situations. You've seen him already executing the RPO at a high level. You've seen him in big moments versus New Orleans executed at a high level. Big moment the second half of the Chargers game executed at a high level for a half after struggling for the first half. The key with young quarterbacks is about adjustments, guys, right? When the game plan's perfect, and the opponent plays into your hands, your first, second reads is there, the protection's there. It's easy for a young quarterback to play at a high level, especially when you're as talented as Deshaun is. The kicker is how do you deal with adversity? When the game plan don't work, when the first option's not there, when the pocket's collapsing, what do you do? For the most part, Deshaun Watson does a good job, right? There's been a couple of times where he himself is hiccuped, and you've seen that in a big way affect the team for four quarters. It wasn't that he hiccuped. It was that they were never able to adjust. And so whether that's Deshaun Watson or Bill O'Brien or a combination of both of them, that's what's got to get more consistent. When those times come up, the adjustments have to be made.
So we're talking about consistency. I want to try something out with you guys. I'm going to throw you guys two sets of stats. It's going to be 4 weeks of ball games. And I want you to tell, after I give you these stats, guess who the quarterback is. So the first week, 233 yards passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions. The second week, 161 yards passing, one touchdown, no interceptions. The third week, 305 yards passing, three touchdowns, no interceptions. The fourth week, 429 yards, five touchdowns, no interceptions. All right, that's four sets of game, right?
Now, is that just random four or like four?
No,
weeks
there's
streak?
Four straight in a row. Okay, okay. I'm gonna make this a legitimate deal here. Now here's four other weeks right here.
All right.
All right. 283 yards passing, two touchdowns, one interception. 238 yards passing, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions. 422 yards passing, two touchdowns, one interception. And on the fourth game, 235 yards, one touchdown, zero interceptions. Who's the quarterback?
I'm going to guess it's Watson and Russell Wilson.
It's the same quarterback.
Oh.
It's the same quarterback.
I'm going to guess it's Brady.
It's Brady. It's not Brady. It's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, one of the most veteran quarterbacks in the league. Those numbers were pretty inconsistent, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is what it is. Quarterbacks have up and down ball games. I think we're getting too down on Deshaun Watson when he has a bad game. And there's nothing wrong with being up when he has a great game. And you look at the teams that people are playing, I feel like I sound like Bill O'Brien right now. It's a week-to-week league. And so sometimes you're going to have a veteran guy that doesn't have a great ball game. That's just – part of the deal. I mean, there's certain game plans that you go out there and you don't look good.
Yeah.
And I think last week Deshaun Watson didn't play well. That's not going to diminish or take away anything from him, what he can do going forward. He's shown that after a bad game, he's going to play a good one. These performances by Aaron Rodgers.
Is that this year?
This season, yes, 2019.
My counterargument to that would be that Green Bay's 8-2.
What's your point?
That they've won those games. That at least four of those games that you mentioned that were bad, he won at least two of them.
I'd have to go back to check the wins. I'm just looking at the stats.
Because he's only lost two games all year, so you'd have to look at Rodgers.
But
one of
Deshaun Watson's bad games,
still a win.
It was a win.
Yeah,
and a couple of his great games, they still lost.
It's so the nature of the position.
That's what I'm saying. I think we're putting too much in him being young and inconsistent and all that type. So, no, all quarterbacks are inconsistent unless you're Russell Wilson that's having an MVP season. And Aaron Rodgers is having an MVP season. A lot of the reasons why he's having an MVP season is because he puts – 305 yards against the Kansas City Chiefs, somebody that people would diminish a good game out of Deshaun Watson for because they don't have a defense. he still got to go out there and throw those touchdowns and make those plays. Right. So, I mean, he's right there with those same guys in the same category, and I expect him to play well tomorrow night on Thursday Night Football.
When you're playing the Falcons of the world, you need to throw for 350 yards and three touchdowns. But whenever you're in a dogfight against Jacksonville or Carolina like Watson was earlier this year, it's not going to matter at the end of the day what the numbers are if he throws, you know, when they pick 200 yards, 16 for 31 or whatever the case may be. But the good quarterbacks, the great quarterbacks, are the ones that when they're not playing their best or statistically they don't look great, they still find ways to win those games, like Tom Brady has done over the course of his career. Tom Brady, you look at his numbers this season, outside of the first couple of weeks, pretty mediocre, but he's winning games. Aaron Rodgers, you just reeled off the four bad weeks that he had in a span of time this year, still won those games at 8-2. So, yes, I think that's part of Watson's development, honestly, is that when he doesn't play his best, he finds a way to win those games.
Well, I don't think those was necessarily bad weeks. I just rolled out four games in a row to just illustrate the fact that a couple games he looks like an average quarterback, and in a couple games he looks like an all-world guy. And we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, a guy that is consistently considered an MVP of the league. And so I'm just saying you have that here in Deshaun Watson. Because he has a bad game, that doesn't diminish the fact that he's not going to have another really good game going forward or great games going forward. That just shows you that's what it is like in the NFL. Quarterbacks have games where you look at him and be like, oh, okay, he just had an 84.4 passer rating. But then a couple weeks later, he has a perfect game, 158.3.
Yeah, and you know, I just thought of the quarterback rating number two for Deshaun Watson. Like, I think he's top two all time in minimum games where Deshaun Watson has the best quarterback rating ever of all time. So I think that would argue against the inconsistency for Deshaun Watson. Okay, if he's so inconsistent, why is his quarterback rating one of the best all time for a quarterback who has started the amount of games Deshaun Watson has? Clinch Turner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham. The college football rankings came out yesterday. Wasn't a change 1-7. LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, still your top four. Alabama's at number five. I mean, I think Memphis at 18, Cincinnati at 19, and SMU at 25 are way too low. But you look back at Alabama at five. A lot of people were thinking that they were going to take a bit of a dive after they lost to a Tagovailoa. They don't have what you would consider a high-quality win. I thought that was ludicrous. I mean, this is Alabama. This is Nick Saban. They still have a 9-1 record. There's no reason that they should have been moved from the number five spot that they're currently at and they were at.
Yeah, look, to me, it's the game of it'll work itself out once again. Georgia, with a loss to a 500 football team, should not be above Alabama. And I don't know who Oregon lost to or who Utah lost to, but if assuming that they didn't lose to a 500 football team, then Georgia should be ahead. I mean, they should be ahead of Georgia as well. I understand that there's some quality wins. I do. I understand that there's an eye test. But when you lose to a 500 football team whose coach is in jeopardy of being fired, that to me, that is detrimental to your case of belonging in the college football playoffs. And so for me, it would be Alabama in the four spot. But I do believe that right there is simply because they know that LSU at this point will have to play Georgia and it'll all work itself out relative to what SEC teams are in or are not in. I think this, I still think Ohio State's the best team in the country.
Why is that?
I when I watch Ohio State play, I buy more into what they're doing than I do LSU. Now, I like LSU. I like what they're doing. I'm blown away with what Joe Burrow's doing. I'm blown away with what Jalen Hurts is doing. Those two guys, the corner they've turned from a quarterback perspective, just playing the position different than I'd ever seen them play, is hard to wrap my head around that they're doing. However, just when I watch those two teams play, I think Ohio State is the best team in the country. And that's hard for me to say because y'all know I'm not a Big Ten guy. I'm not an Ohio State guy. But I think Ohio State's a better football team. LSU's defense is suspect, and it might end up biting them in the tail before it's all over with. They got Arkansas this week, so it more than likely will not be this week that anything bites them in the tail. But I think that defense is going to be a problem once they get in them college football playoffs.
Clint Turner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham, James Wiseman. We remember him, right? The news came out on James Wiseman on his length of how long he's going to be out. Memphis announcing that they were going to drop their little counter deal that they had with the NCAA, drop the subpoena that allowed James Wiseman to play. Well, the NCAA has ruled on James Wiseman. He must sit out 12 games total. He'll be eligible to return on January 12th. He'll also have to donate $11,500 to a charity of his choice. You look back at the date, January 12th is when he'll be able to return. So that means he'll only miss one conference game. That's a home game for Tulane. So a resolution. Memphis, I'm sure, is probably pretty happy about this. They get Wiseman back in time for conference play.
So when is he supposed to do this donation? I'm all about charity. I'm all about giving back. So if he made the donation, let's say a week from now, does he get suspended again?
Well, he'll just borrow from FedEx. It's all good.
I'm just saying. And then he gets suspended again. Like, that was a weird little stipulation to the deal. But, hey, man, 12 games in the overall grand scheme of things is not going to affect Memphis one way or the other, what they're going to do when they try to get into the NCAA tournament. I think that it gets him back in time to play some of the better games in their schedule, and also, more importantly, when it comes into their conference games and into the conference tournament, and they're gonna have a tough conference to deal with. You got U of H is in the conference, and there's some other good teams in the conference that they're gonna have to deal with. So we'll see what happens, but Wiseman is gonna be top one, top two pick in the NBA draft. And so I'm sure he'll be able to come up with that 11-5 in the near future.
At some point. IOU from James Wiseman, but he will be able to play for most of the conference games for Memphis. We'll only miss one. He'll be suspended 12 games and have to repay the money that he was given from Penny Hardaway to a charity of his choice.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.